Click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.
Just a bit outside. Fritz down the floor, jams it. Ho-ho.
Can you do this for me? Every single game, can you do this? Coach, not only will I do it for you, yes, I'll do it for you.
Do it.
Welcome to the Count Pointer Count pregame show. Now, the host of Count Pointer Count, Brother J-Dub.
Hi, folks, and welcome into another edition of the Count Pointer Count pregame show. I am Brother J-Dub, and it's been one wacky week in the world of sports. I mean, you'll listen to Brian's soapbox here coming up at the end of the show about there was really hard-pressed to find any positives other than the fact that Cal Ripken and Tony Gwynn got inducted into the Hall of Fame on Sunday. So it's been a pretty negative week this week. But speaking of Brian, Blakeney, what time is it right now?
It's time for the recap rant of the week.
These things I know. You can call it whatever you want, but Sergio Garcia choked yesterday. Now, it wasn't a Scott Hoke miss 2-foot putt type choke or a Greg Norman blow up on Sunday at Augusta choke, but it was close. El Nino had only 3 bogeys all week long entering Sunday's final round at Carnoustie, and on Sunday, he had 5. Garcia had a 3-shot lead going into Sunday's final round, and his nearest competition, Steve Stricker, shot 74. The eventual winner, Padraig Harrington, even finished the tournament bogey double bogey. Yet somehow Garcia managed to let it slip away. Fear not, though, Sergio. The Ryder Cup is only 14 months away. We know you'll play better then. These things I know. When news of point-shaving NBA referee Tim Donaghy came down Friday, I was listening to Sports Talk Radio at the time. Calls were being fielded about Michael Vick, Barry Bonds, and the start of the NFL season just a few short weeks away. Not one caller called in about the NBA mess. That tells me either one of two things. The public doesn't care, or we all knew it was only a matter of time. As Bill Simmons said from the Evil Empire, it's like your grandpa smoking 3 packs of unfiltered cigarettes a day for 30 years, and then finding out he has lung cancer.
And that was our recap rant of the week. Brian, this too I know, that was an awesome rant. Coming up next on the Count Point Account pregame show, Prince Valiant, Tom Abbott from the Golf Channel joins us from across the pond and talking about the Senior British Open. Tom Watson walks away with another one. You're listening to the Count Point Account pregame show on OSG Sports Radio, the World Internet Radio Network, and Automatic.com. Stick around.
Count Pointer Count.
This is your man, Cabby, on the street from the Score Television Network, coming at you live on OSG Sports Radio. I'm with my man, John Nelson. Do not turn that dial. It's one of the baddest dudes in the country on the audio tip, and he's pretty good in the strip club.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
You see, we're on a mission from God.
Count Pointer Count on the World Internet Radio Network and Podomatic.com. Now, back to Count Pointer Count on OSG Sports Radio.
Let me tell y'all what it's like being male, middle class, and white. It's a bitch if you don't believe. Listen up to my new CD, Sham On.
B-Block now on the pregame show, and as always, B-Block stands for Blakeney, www.MikeBlakeney, BLAKENEY.com. He's a rental for you because he belongs to us. And I always get my Star Wars trilogy messed up here. I don't. What was the second one? Was that Revenge of the Jedi? Was that what that one was, Tom?
Oh, I've never seen a Star Wars movie in my life, so I really have no idea. Okay. I know that's going to upset some people, but sorry.
Well, then I guess this is we'll just go ahead and say it's the Return of the Jedi or Revenge of the Sith or whatever one it is. Second in the trilogy with you overseas. And I'll ask you off the air about the wedding. That's not necessarily important for us. It's not your wedding. It's somebody else's, but we'll talk about that a little later. Golf, the second week of 3 overseas, Senior British Open. Tom Watson wins his third Senior British in 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, he's used to winning British Opens, though, winning 5 of them in his career. And, of course, he won one at Muirfield in 1980. So he's still got it, though. Do you know, Tom Watson has once said that he went 10 years without really hitting a bad strike. I mean, most people go sort of 1 week if they're lucky. I mean, Watson went in 10 years, and he was just fantastic from tee to green. Obviously, he'd had some problems on the greens over the years with the short putting, but it all came together, and he was without doubt the best player out there on all 4 days, and it came together. Had a little problem at the last, as you may have seen in the bunker, but apart from that, it was plain sailing for Watson, and just a great links golfer and a great ambassador for certainly for the American game, and really for the game of golf over the years, and he deserved it. And with the way he's playing, I mean, he could certainly come back in years to come and win again. You know, most people think in senior golf that you only have about 5 or 6 years where you can really take advantage. But, you know, Watson getting, up in the upper 50s is still very much a world beater in that game.
Now let's get to the other reason why you're over there. Let's set things up a little bit. The Evian Masters over in France. Natalie Gulbis, the winner. Lorena Ochoa, a couple strokes back. Natalie Gulbis getting momentum heading into the Women's British Open now.
Well, it's brilliant for Natalie to win. I mean, absolutely brilliant. She's been out there for this sixth season on the LPGA Tour, and she's a player that gets a lot of attention away from her golf. I mean, obviously, she's very famous in the women's game. She has a lot of sex appeal. She has a lot of things going on away from the course, and she draws a lot of people into the game, which is brilliant. But there's been question marks about her golf and whether she could actually win and whether she could actually come through and take a title. She got into a playoff last year with Mi Yoon Kim that went on for 3 holes, and she eventually lost that. And people are saying, "Wow, maybe she'll never win." And I think it was just brilliant for her that she could come through and get a victory. And she thought she'd thrown it away. She thought she had to get to 7-under par to win. She eventually finished at 4-under, went into a playoff with Zhong Zhang, and then made the birdie at the first playoff hole to win. So excellent for Natalie Gulbis. She's had injuries this year. I mean, those people that follow the women's game will know that she has sort of an unorthodox swing, and it's given her some problems with her back. But she took a few weeks off, about a month off earlier earlier in the summer, sort of late spring. She had a little time away from the game, and she made some changes to her golf swing, and she's saying that that was the difference. That was why she won. She made these changes because she had to make them, and it was the difference for her this week. So good for her. I think it's really good for the women's game to see somebody like that winning a golf tournament.
And the Women's British heading to St. Andrews for the first time. How huge is that for the women's game?
Oh, it's brilliant, isn't it? It's excellent that she's going that everybody's going to be playing at St. Andrews, and it's just great for the game of golf to be playing in an environment like that. I mean, just with so much history, for the first time a professional women's event is going to be played at St. Andrews, and it's brilliant. You know, it has to happen. I mean, it is a focal point for the game of golf, and not to have had a women's tournament there, you know, defies belief at times. But, you know, times are changing and the game is modernizing, and this is a step in the right direction for the game. And I think everybody is excited for it to be there. All the players, certainly, when I spoke to them earlier this throughout the year, really, they've been saying, "Oh, I'm really excited to play those 2 weeks playing Evian, which is a big tournament for them, and then to go to St. Andrews and play at the home of golf is going to be excellent." So I think they're all looking forward to it. The big question mark for the players is whether they can get past the fact that they're actually playing on the home of golf and really concentrate on winning this tournament, because it's a very, very important golf tournament for them. It's obviously the final of 4 majors that they have throughout the year, and it's a really important week. So obviously the weather plays a big factor, but whoever can really get their game in shape and concentrate on winning this tournament is going to be a very important week for them.
So then handicap it for me. Is it easy just to say that there's going to be a lot of Korean golfers at the top? Will Ochoa rebound from the previous majors? Handicap this thing for me.
Well, you can always bet on a Kim or a Lee. I think that sort of narrows your chances down. You've got a good odds of on a Kim or a Lee winning. But Mi Yoon Kim would probably be the favorite amongst the Kims, but she's a little short. I think somebody who hits it long will have an advantage at St. Andrews. When you look at Tiger Woods and the dominance that he's had there, he's able to hit shorter clubs off the tee because he's a little longer, and he can take the trouble out of play, and he can place his tee shots. I think when you look at the players that are longer out there, you've got to look at somebody like Lorena Ochoa, the world number one, have a good final round at Evian. I think she is. I think she is definitely a contender. She has to win a major championship sometime or another. She's even got pressure from her father, as she said earlier this year, that obviously the media saying, when are you going to win? And her father saying, when are you going to win a major? So she knows she needs to win a major championship. I think Laura Davies could be somebody to watch out for, obviously playing in Britain. She's English, playing in Scotland, but still in British territory. So she's going to be a fan favorite. She hits it a long way. She likes to hit those little low shots with the driver. That could play into her hands. And you also look at some of the veteran campaigners. Julie Inkster comes off a very good week. Sherry Steinhauer is the defending champion, who is a veteran campaigner out there. Somebody who knows how to win a golf tournament, knows how to plod their way around a golf course. And you've got to watch out for people like that. But when the weather comes in, which it may do this week, when the wind blows, that can really sort of change things. I mean, you've got tee times lasting all day, and you've got the wind blowing in the morning, and then it's calm in the afternoon, and that can really just level a field.
Tom Abbott of the Golf Channel, be safe over there. Enjoy St. Andrews enough for all of us here on OSG Sports Radio, and we will catch up with you after the Women's British. Be safe over there, buddy. We'll catch up with you next week.
Thanks, John. Enjoyed it.
And coming up next, the C Block. We start the continuing saga of the Summer of Seven. Greg Burton, WTVR-TV, Action Phil, and J-Dub talk about the past week. All that land, Count Pointer Count, OSG Sports Radio. Rolls on after this.
I'm rocking the suburbs. Just like quiet Ryan did. I'm rocking the suburbs. Except that they were talented.
Folks, I've been informed we'll be in a holding pattern for the next hour.
It's time to play Take on Orbits. Today's players need to alert each of their clients they'll be late for a meeting from midair.
Oh.
Ready? Go.
Done.
Orbitz notifies anyone you're running late automatically.
Introducing Orbitz TLC. You get treated like a VIP only when you book on Orbitz and go.
Stop multitasking. Count Pointer Count is back on the air.
I'm gonna fight them all. A seven-nation army couldn't hold me back.
Count Pointer Count pregame show in J-Dub's corner here. I am Brother J-Dub. And joining us here in the corner this week, we've got Brother Phil. Phil, how's it going, brother?
It's going well. Glad to come into the corner here.
And we've also got another punch in the OSG Subway card for Greg Burton. Greg, thanks for joining us again from Richmond.
Yes, very excited. Thank you.
Exactly. Pretty soon, I think Jared's going to let you upsize that thing. So keep that card handy.
No doubt. No doubt. No doubt.
But we got Burton and Philly in here today to talk about the media circus that is part of the continuing saga of the Summer of Seven. And obviously, Burton's going to be talking about the media circus that was the bond hearing for Michael Vick last week, and Phil's going to be talking about the circus that was the first day of spring training. Excuse me, Billy Martin, first day of training camp.
yeah, you can really tell Mike wrote that statement, couldn't you?
You can, exactly. But we're first going to talk about the bond hearing up in Richmond. Burton, what was it like being at the Rocket Docket during the bond hearing with Uki last week?
It was really a freak show. I mean, it was a freak show in the court. It was a freak show outside on Main Street because, you know, obviously you had, you know, a couple hundred protesters. Those PETA people. I'm definitely anti-dogfighting, but I'm now anti-PETA because those people are a little overzealous. And it was really, I've never really seen anything like that because people are so so outraged by it, and then there was just people that were using this event as a forum for their own cause. Like, there was pro-life people out there. There was people protesting the war in Iraq, and then there were just, you know, hundreds of people on their lunch break or late afternoon in downtown Richmond kind of walking around. So outside it was a zoo. Of course, as soon as Vic pulls up, the boos and the catcalls start. It looked like he briefly glanced over and I don't know. I don't know if you could qualify it as a smirk, but it sure looked like it from Vic's face. And then, of course, inside, you know, it was pretty routine. He pled not guilty. The trial date was set. And you guys mentioned afterwards his attorney, Billy Martin, read a statement that allegedly was Vic's own words. I mean, that's what Billy insisted that it was. But no offense, I'm pretty sure Mike would never use the term spring training. And you just kind of have to wonder where things go from there. Of course, we had a serious development over the weekend with Tony Taylor, one of the four defendants, one of the three co-defendants with Vic.
One of the Alphabet Soup guys.
Basically copping a plate. We do not have the specific details. It is a sealed motion on the docket of Judge Henry Hudson. Tony Taylor will be in court 9 a.m. Monday morning, and we should find out more about whether he's going to flip. I mean, you would have to assume, look, we all watch Law and Order, right? So basically, you have to assume that he is angling for a lighter sentence in exchange for his cooperation with the prosecution, and you got to figure he's going to probably testify. If it does go to trial on November the 26th, that Tony Taylor will testify against his, I almost have to say, former friend Michael Vick, because a lot of stories have come out about how they used to be really tight, but now it seems that they've had a falling out, and shortly after the dog allegation, Vick kicked him out of the Surry County home. So, you know, the $100,000 question is, how much does Tony Taylor know? And does he have video proof? You can't tell me that in this day and age of camera phones and handheld cameras, that these guys who get so hyped up on dogfighting don't video it so they can relive it later. So, I mean, it's a matter of how much does Tony Taylor know, and we may get a first glimpse of that on Monday morning.
Well, if you talk to Jamie Dukes, I mean, camera phones are the way to go nowadays. So,
yeah, but you get little bizarre statements from Jamie Dukes when you ask him things.
This is true. I guess we shouldn't be surprised with that. But talking about moving on to the same exact day, going into training camp at the Falcons, Phil, you were part of that media circus. I mean, Michael Vick is up in Richmond, but his presence was still felt at training camp. Talk about that first day from a media's perspective.
Oh, I would talk about it from anybody's perspective. It was, again, much like up in Richmond, and like Greg was talking about, it was just absolutely bizarre. Again, you had a whole row, in this case, actually probably about 100 or so protesters. You also had people who were there to support him and yelling back at the protesters, and at one point in the afternoon, they were chanting back and forth at each other. Along with that, you've got 20 or so news and sports cameras, about 10 live and satellite trucks, and the whole thing, really, it was a circus. It affected the way the practice went. The guys did go out there and practice, but they weren't quite as crisp. You didn't the same energy level that I've seen over the last couple of days as I've been out there attending practice. And there were people everywhere. The Falcons media room, which normally is attended by 5 or 6 cameras, I would say there were about 12 in there for the press conferences that they set up after practice was over. And I give the Falcons some credit. What they did in order to prevent this dragging out is they made some of their senior players and coach available, all who were willing to talk about their thoughts and feelings as much as they could in terms of what happened. They did it. They said it. They talked about it, got it over with. And the last thing that was said, okay, thanks. It's on to football from here.
Now, Phil, wasn't there an airplane flying above Flowery Branch on that first day?
Yes, there was. A small airplane with one of those tow banners that you see periodically out at the beach, and it said new Falcons nickname, the dog killers ? And it buzzed over practice pretty much the whole time that we were out there. They went almost 2 hours on Thursday afternoon, and honestly, the players noticed it, the fans noticed it, we noticed it. In fact, Algie Crumple, one of the first things he was asked in the press conference was, did he see it? And he said, yeah, I saw it. I kept thinking the thing was going to run out of gas, and it kept going.
Now, both of you guys, I want to jump both of you in. Let's do this three-way dance here. Where do you think it's going to go from here? Because, Phil, you said yourself traffic kind of died down at training camp as the week progressed up until this morning. Where do you think we as media are going to take the story now in light of, like, Burton's new developments and everything else? What's next on our docket as far as the story is concerned?
Where I hope it goes is that people just kind of let it go until there's some sort of either he pleads out, or, which I don't think will happen, or it goes to trial, or there's some sort of large development involved, that's when you're going to see the news crews descend and swarm again. But other than that, I don't think they will, at least on a local level. Now, that being said, I actually sat there the other night after work watching TV with my wife, and Nancy Grace came on. And Nancy Grace had Chuck Smith, who was a former Atlanta Falcon, on the show, and she had some psychologist lady, who I've never heard of, on the show as well. And after talking to Chuck for a little while, they turned and asked the question to the psychologist, and the question was, Chuck just went on and said how good of a guy Mike is, how he's basically a laid-back, kind of introverted guy, but yet he's exhibited signs of this behavior. What does that tell you? And the psychologist, the first words out of her mouth were, well, that tells me that he's probably a sociopath. And we had to turn the channel at that point. You've got news people out there who are speculating now, and cable news networks are just dragging this on and on and on, trying to speculate and fill a news hole. And that's where the problem's going to come into play. Would you agree with that, Greg?
I'm a little uncomfortable. You know, people want to say, you know, he's innocent until proven guilty. You know, that's a really nice sentiment, and I know it's kind of at the core of our national fabric. But let's be honest. Thomas Jefferson didn't have ESPN. Thomas Jefferson and George Washington, the founding fathers, didn't have sports talk radio and the internet. So in this day and age where anybody can start up a blog, opinions are what people, you know, everybody wants to kind of share their opinions. So it's really easy to just say, oh, well, we really shouldn't judge. We judge every day. I mean, we judge every day, so I really don't have a problem with it. I mean, we're not handling it. I would like to think that if I was sitting on that jury, that I would take it seriously, and I would reserve judgment and listen to all the evidence, which is what someone in this commonwealth will have to do probably down the road. But right now, I have absolutely no problem going on my talk show or anybody else on their talk show and trying to add some perspective and saying, you know, where did this all go wrong for Michael Vick? You know, how did this all start? And kind of having an exchange of dialogue and ideas. You know, I know that we all kind of screwed up on the Duke Lacrosse case, but, you know, I blame that on Mike Nifon. Because we had a respected district attorney who basically flat out lied. So, I mean, that's how we all got duped in that one. But with the Michael Vick case, I think we all have a lot of faith in the federal prosecutors. And, you know, I think, where does this go? I think Tony Taylor's already cut deal. We're already getting word that another one of the co-defendants is angling for a deal. And you guys know, first one to the table gets the best deal.
Yep.
So, I think that I think Vic's in trouble. I still think there are a lot of people in this country who are like, "What's the big deal? It's just dogs." I mean, let's be honest. I mean, it's gruesome and it's incredibly violent. But I think there's still some pockets in this nation where people are like, "So what? It's a dog." And why are we wasting our time on this? But the bottom line is, they're gunning for Michael Vick.
Now,
Phil's probably in a better position to answer this than me. I can't imagine he's ever going to play for the Falcons again. He's not going to play this year. And I can't imagine he's ever going to play for the Falcons again. But I'd be naive if I thought that his career is over. I'd like to think that maybe it is, but I just think that even if he went to jail for 3 to 5 years and comes out when he's 31 or 32, you don't think someone would try to take a chance on him? They probably would, because that's how desperate teams are to win in the National Football League.
I mean, the Broncos took a chance on Maurice Claret. I mean, anything's possible.
No question.
What do you think, Phil? Do you think he's done in Atlanta?
Yeah, he's absolutely done in Atlanta. It's been kind of one of those unsaid kind of comments that everybody's made, but he can't show his face here anymore. I mean, there's too much that's already gone on, even though that this hasn't gone wild, and it's not just this. It's the water bottle incident earlier in the spring. It's the flipping off of the fans at the end of last season. And it's even things like the incident where I believe it actually might have been T, I'm not sure of this, that lifted the man's TSA security guard's Rolex at the Atlanta airport in 2004, an incident that was reported in the Washington Post. And Billy White Shoes Johnson was sent down to essentially make that go away. I mean, it's been a long list of things with him, and that alone, I think, disqualifies him from ever playing here. Plus, Arthur Blank is just absolutely heartbroken. If this is proven out to be true, he would have completely lied to him.
Yeah, who would have thought that Marcus Vick was the better of the two brothers?
Yeah, he's not. Trust me. He's not. You know, I've heard, and I know it's a joke, and I said that, but, like, trust me. He's the one who almost attacked a news reporter down in Norfolk last week and called him a cracker. So, I mean, he's the funniest thing. The joke is that, you know, Vic in the statement said, you know, I look forward to clearing my good name. His name hasn't been good since they said with the first pick the Atlanta Falcons select Michael Vick.
In some respect, I do disagree with that because I think he showed some potential to be the player that everybody thought he could be. But it never happened. And all the sideshow stuff has just eventually kind of caught up to him. And, yeah, it probably would have no matter what how he developed. But it's just kind of sad to think that this guy's got all this skill and all this ability, and he's just completely wasting it.
No question. No, I couldn't agree with you more. And I've always kind of defended Dick in that. I thought he could be an all-pro quarterback. I thought he could be a Hall of Fame quarterback. We debate that all the time. I think the game is changing, and you don't have to be Montana or Marino or Elway. You could, a quarterback like Vic could succeed and lead a team to a championship, but I don't know if we're ever going to get to find out, at least not in Vic's case.
Well, you look at where they were, you know, after last year, they had made Vic a pocket passer. I mean, they go out and bring a Joe Horn in who runs his mouth, but he's still a quality receiver. He was primed this year to have a breakout season if he continued to work on what he learned last year, but like you said, Burton, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to see the fruits of that labor this year.
Well, this was going to be a make-or-break year for him, even if this hadn't come up. With the new system under Coach Bobby Petrino, it had been whispered underneath to several people inside here that if he couldn't succeed in this system in 2007, chances are he wasn't going to succeed at all, and they probably would part ways and start rebuilding and going in a different direction. Yeah, it was a make-or-break season. And one other thing I wanted to add, and Greg, you could chime in on this too, is I've gotten to spend some time with Mike in the past just from interviews and being around him at different events and being around him in the locker room when we go over and cover the story on the team. He doesn't come across as a bad person, at least at first contact. And that's the part about this that's kind of disappointing.
Yeah, Mike was always, you know, we obviously covered him from the moment he left Newport News and landed in Blacksburg, and he was kind of quiet and even shy to a point. He had a big smile, and you could tell he was having fun, and, you know, who wouldn't? I mean, he did a flip into the end zone for his first collegiate touchdown against James Madison. Nearly broke his ankle, but from then it was just, you know, there was this just incredible relationship and nearly led Tech to the national championship in that 99-2000 season, the 2000 Sugar Bowl. And so, yeah, I mean, there was never really an inkling. It wasn't like, oh, well, there's this dark side. We knew he came out of a horrible neighborhood in a housing project in Newport News, but we just never really got the slightest inkling that, like, there's a dark side to Vic. You know, he's involved in some bad stuff. We could all probably assume he had some friends that had some unsatiable past, but I just think that I never really got any indication. I think it's really like the contract, once he signed that big $100 million contract, I think that's when people started to grab at Michael Vick and ask for things, and he was trying to help friends out, and then that's where things kind of spiraled out of control.
Well, we've been talking.
JW, still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm just letting you guys run. Well, we've been talking today for the last 17 minutes or so about Michael Vick and the media coverage of him up in Richmond as well down in Atlanta. Joining us here in the corner this week has been WTVR's Greg Burton. Greg, thanks again for punching another hole with us this week.
Anytime, fellas.
And also, Brother Phil, we've got you in here. I appreciate it. I think this is your first chance in the corner. I know you led an interview here before, but this is your first chance in my corner. So thanks for joining me today.
Absolutely. Look forward to doing the rest of the show a little later in the day.
Yeah, don't go anywhere. We're going to need you for the A, B, and the stink. So make sure you stay close.
Always here.
You've been listening to J-Dub's Corner here on OSG Sports Radio and the World Internet Radio Network. Stick around. Nelly's coming back in the next segment to give us a tease of this week's Count Corner Count. Stay tuned. Uh-huh.
Have you made the O part of your morning? Or perhaps part of your game? maybe an afternoon in, or an hour in the gym, an elegant evening out, or a vacation somewhere far away. You'll save on thousands of products at Overstock.com, as well as books, business supplies, auctions, and travel. Make the O part of your life. Overstock.com. It's all about the O.
Welcome back to Count Pointer Count on the World Internet Radio Network and Podomatic.com.
Welcome back to the Count Pointer Count pregame show here on the World Internet Radio Network, OSG Sports Radio, and Podomatic.com. I am Brother J-Dub. We've got a huge show packed for you today, and it all seems to revolve around one particular number. Bringing in John Nelson right now to talk about today's show. John, take it away, my friend.
Thanks, J-Dub. And as always, this summer, at least this summer anyway, we seem to be going with the continuing saga of the summer of seven. And we'll tackle it from another couple of points of view. It was the beginning of training camp for the Atlanta Falcons, and Michael Vick was also having to make the walk of shame in a courtroom in Richmond, Virginia. Here's your update on how the defendants turn, courtesy of our friends at WAVY-TV.
Inside Richmond's federal courthouse, Tony Taylor confessed to it all, playing a key role in a dogfighting ring and executing dogs.
Mr. Taylor, how many dogs did you execute?
How are you feeling?
Was Mr. Vick involved in this?
Is Vick guilty of the same charge?
Did he bankroll the operation? Did Michael Vick execute any dogs?
Taylor told the judge he wanted to plea bargain because, according to the agreement, he knew the United States could prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt. Taylor has already given evidence against Michael Vick, portraying him as the leader of the alleged dogfighting ring. Taylor says operation and gambling monies were almost exclusively funded by Michael Vick. Taylor confesses, saying he and Vick, along with Pernell Peace and Quanis Phillips, forced dogs to fight and rip each other apart. Dogs with names like Maniac, Jane, Magic, and Big Boy. The statement also lists several dog fights Taylor claims Vick attended in Virginia and other states. Prosecutors already have said a superseding indictment will be issued next month, which could mean more charges against Vick and the remaining co-defendants. And Taylor has agreed to take as many lie detector tests as the government wants. He will be sentenced December 14th after the other men go to trial.
So the summer of seven takes up the A and the B, the C and the F, kind of going a little out of order there. Two-part conversation between John Wilkerson and Paul Crane about media days, and we get to figure out once again whether or not they're spelled D-A-Y-S or D-A-Z-E. Paul Crane working the middle of the country, and John Wilkerson seeing Jesus Christ himself show up in Alabama at SEC Media Days. Nick Saban. Brickyard 400 and everything going on with racing, DEI and Ginn merger with you in the pit stop. Tommy Palmer gets paired this week with Jeff Lynn and the Electric Light Orchestra. For your E-block, G-block, Kitchen Stink, Stewart Sink. You see, and I have to think about it to get it done. Probably a Donaghy update, as well as everything else that's gone goofy. G standing for goofy, I guess, this particular week in the G. Brian in his cell, and probably one of the worst weeks of sports in quite some time. He'll kind of encapsulate it for us, and also, as we finish up the show, we'll take a look at the stunning death of Skip Prosser from Wake Forest. A big loss for the ACC for college basketball. And for the folks there in Winston-Salem. J-Dub, that's the show. Back to you.
Nelly, thanks as always. And I've not been quiet about my feelings towards Wake Forest on this show since I did play ball there, and I did go there for several years. And the Skip Prosser death is huge to me, as well as a bunch of my Demon Deacon compatriots. So we will be ending the show on that piece today after Brian's soapbox. So thanks again for coming in and talking about today's show. And the full Count Pointer Count is coming up after this commercial break here on OSG Sports Radio, the World Internet Radio Network, and Podomatic.com.
Warning, this contains explicit material not suitable for children.
He's just going to do, hi, I'm Corey Kessler, I'm God's gift to women, and you're listening to OST Sports Radio, or something like that.
Hello, I'm Corey Kessler, we're in hoops heaven, everybody. You're listening to OSG Sports Radio. Tune in to Johnny Nelson every week.
Count Pointer Count.
Oh, you've got to admit, that is pretty neat.
The
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
Coming to you from OSG Central Headquarters,
wherever that is.
My owner, Arthur Blank, who I love sincerely. I put him through a lot.
It's time for Count Pointer Count.
I was a better player because I was part of the Oriole Way.
Do it.
Now, the host of Count Pointer Count, John Nelson.
She broke a needle, now she can't sell walking and all.
A Block, and we continue with the continuing saga of the Summer of Seven. Subtitle this week, T-Bone.
Yeah, I guess that would work.
It would work.
And we have one of the letters of the alphabet already going to the front of the line for a plea deal.
Yeah, it was just it wasn't a matter of when, it was just a matter of who.
Who?
And
who's going to crack?
As we talked earlier in the pregame show with WTVR's Greg Burton,
subtle plug,
we talked a little bit about who might be next. It definitely won't be Vic.
No,
because he's not in a position where he can plead out.
No, not after the circus in Richmond on Thursday. With his lawyer saying he looks forward to clearing his name.
Yes. So, who would you like to hear from first? Would you like to get your T-Bone update, or would you like to hear from Billy Martin?
Let's get the T-Bone update, because we need to talk a little bit further about Billy Martin.
Okay, here's your update from All Things Richmond, courtesy of Patrick Terpstra and our friends at WVEC-TV and WVEC.com.
We begin our team coverage with Patrick Terpstra live in Richmond, where Tawny Taylor entered his plea in federal court.
Big developments today indeed. Tawny Taylor pledging to work with prosecutors in their case against Michael Vick. He says he's doing this because he did not believe he stood any chance of winning the case against him. Tawny Taylor gave a boost to the prosecution by answering yes to questions from Judge Henry Hudson. Did you sponsor an animal dog fighting venture with the other three individuals, Vick among them? Yes, he said. Do you agree to cooperate with the government? Yes. A sworn statement of facts signed by Taylor already reveals new information. Multiple times he puts Vic at dogfights, some at Vic's Surrey County home, others on the road. And Taylor's statement says Vic bankrolled the operation and provided money for gambling on the dogs, information not listed in the criminal indictment. Taylor refused comment when leaving the courtroom, but said yes to Judge Hudson when asked if the state could prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he participated in dogfighting. Taylor instantly became a convicted felon with sentencing set for December. The severity of the sentence likely depends on how much he coughs up to prosecutors. More bad news for Vic.
We don't know how much information the government has, but what's critical is now Tawny Taylor will testify in open court to those matters.
And Taylor's sentencing will not happen until the end of the trial. By the way, all of the documents from today's proceedings are available on our website, WVEC.com.
Billy Martin.
Not to be confused with the former baseball manager of the same name.
That manager had a better game plan.
Well, he does have a pretty good track record.
When he was sober, yeah, he did, but yeah, the Billy Martin we're talking about, yeah, does have an excellent track record.
However, for those of you who haven't heard it, the prepared statement that Mr. Vic allegedly wrote...
He was signing papers.
...and had Mr. Martin delivered didn't exactly sound like something that Mike wrote himself.
And here is Billy Martin reading said statement, courtesy of our friends at ESPN.com.
Today in court, I pleaded innocent to the allegations made against me. I take these charges very seriously and look forward to clearing my good name. I respectfully ask all of you to hold your judgment until all of the facts are shown. Above all, I would like to say to my mom, I'm sorry for what she has had to go through in this most trying of times. It has caused pain to my family, and I apologize to my family. I also want to apologize to my Falcon teammates for not being with them at the beginning of spring training. As you know, Michael has played football his entire life.
His entire life?
Michael wants the world to know that there is nowhere that he would rather be right now than in training camp with his teammates.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, Wilkie.
You're wrong here.
Would a football player refer to training camp as spring training or not?
I don't think so. Maybe a baseball player might. Maybe when he played at Virginia Tech.
Well, no, that's the Balco grand jury that would need that one.
Yeah, but I'm referring to the spring training.
Right, yeah, so am I.
He must have thought he was still playing for Frank Beamer.
Or when he was drafted by the Colorado Rockies out of college.
That too.
Any way you slice it, that alone pretty much should tell most sports people that those words did not come out of Mr. Vick's mouth.
Yeah.
By the way, when Beamer was broached about Michael Vick in Pinehurst, he gave the standard answer you'd expect him to say. He's a good kid. He was good here in Blacksburg and blah, blah, blah. That was about it. That's about all you got out of Beamer.
But one of the things that you also brought up to me off the air was they got other things that are slightly more important than worrying about a former football player.
Now, after what happened in April, it just trumps anything that happens with a former player. And they do realize, the Virginia Tech football team realize, they're the identity of that university. And they're taking that to their heart for this season. And when they open in September at Lane Stadium and throughout the year, and they're expecting a special year, and they've got the team to have the type of special year that might happen.
So T has turned, and let's hear from the Jolly Roger about the whole process and how disgusted he is about the continuing saga of the Summer of Seven. Once again, courtesy of our friends at ESPN.com, Roger Goodell, Commissioner of the Shield.
Let me make it very clear that the National Football League is very disappointed that Michael put himself in this position. We by no way think that dogfighting or anything related to dogfighting is acceptable. We think it's despicable, frankly, and we're very concerned about the allegations that are being made, but they are allegations right now. And from the moment you read that indictment, it turns your stomach, and we're extremely disappointed that a player has been alleged to be involved with that. And we take that very seriously.
Okay, we're about halfway through. We've got about 4 minutes left here, guys.
The interesting part of this to me is the fact that there's already talk of there being some secondary, or if I, not being a lawyer, I can't think of the
superseding
indictment that is may show up here sometime in August.
Right.
Makes one wonder if perhaps Mr. T rolling over here might have something to do with that, and there may be further charges.
I was going to say, does Mr. T pity that fool? I heard Lester Munson on my way to Birmingham talking about that, and the superseding indictments really don't bode well at all for number seven. That could be the deal breaker. Cliche alert, exactly.
Yeah, that's fine.
That could be the nail in the coffin right there as far as, you know, any type of pro football career, any type of punishment that happened.
The one thing that I brought up with Gabriel Morenci on Hardcore Sports Radio was that you probably could see racketeering, RICO statutes, and tax evasion added on.
Because, without question.
When you lose tens of thousands of dollars and you have to hand them over in a backpack, when you've been losing, you know, dogfights, I don't quite think that you write those losses off to the Internal Revenue Service.
No.
they tend to frown upon those kind of things.
So that means that you're going to have assets frozen, assets seized, the house is seized. It's already evidence in a case.
Which is why the alleged sale hasn't been able to go through.
Yeah, at half price. I mean, that's a nice half price sale considering that was T, who claimed to be Seven's agent at the time the house was picked up, I think the land was picked up for $365 with the house. And
nice.
So he's trying to dump it for roughly $180, and I don't think that's going to happen.
No, there's no way that's going to happen.
And so are we going to see Q and Funk?
P-Funk now, come on.
Oh, I thought, okay, okay, so we're going with all the letters. So P-Funk.
You've got to.
P-Funk and Q. Now, we know that T's going to get the best deal. It's almost like a
certainly not
sale
P-Funk now. As in George Clinton and the P-Funk All-Stars.
No, I voted for Clinton for president.
George Clinton.
Yes.
Okay.
So
you're showing your lack of hipness there, but
thank
anyway.
You. I appreciate that. Yeah, the P-Funk All-Stars are the cabinet. So are you guys seeing any more guys turn in this, and Michael Vick being the poster child, he's going to end up on this pedestal someplace where people are just going to knock him down the entire time from now on?
Well, the rest of the guys in this alphabet soup probably doesn't have the same representation as Michael Vick has. So knowing that, I would not be surprised if those guys start singing.
I think at this point, Mike's out on an island. He's out there by himself.
Kind of like Tom Hanks in Castaway?
In some respects, only instead of being a castaway, he's got the full weight of the federal government breathing down his neck, sitting there offshore waiting to jump.
And it was a nice suit he wore on the Walk of Shame.
Yes. Yes, it was.
A little too pimp daddy for me.
Now, the thing that gets me is that in this prepared statement that he wrote but didn't say, he apologized to his mother and wants to get back out on the field. He didn't apologize to Arthur Blank. He didn't apologize to his teammates, to the best of my memory.
No.
He just apologized to his mom. And I think this was one of the biggest gaffes when you could have started this case on the right foot. You come out, you make a statement that you know won't be incriminating towards you, a nice generic statement. You walk away, no questions, everything's fine.
Well,
and you screwed it up.
Well, it comes down to the second phase of having any kind of a public trial, and that's the PR war, which is something we could talk about here when we come up in the B block
or
a little bit later in the show.
Yeah, after this. Last statements in the A before we head to the B. Anything? Anyone?
Let's go to B.
Okay, then we'll go to the B. We're going to take a break. B stands for break for the moment. When we come back, the players end and the fallout from the continuing saga of the Summer of 7 as OSG Sports Radio and Camp Horner Count rolls off after this.
Football fans know the Hail Mary, but few know its origins. In 1967, at a game in Poughkeepsie, a hailstorm struck. The quarterback shouted to his girlfriend, "Hail Mary," but he was too late, and Mary was hit by a hailstone the size of a grapefruit. In his anguish, he threw the ball 90 yards. Of course, his team won. Of course, this story is also false, kind of like the idea that UPS is only fast on the ground. The truth is, UPS is fast whether you ship via ground or air, across town or across the globe. UPS, what can Brown do for you?
B Block now on Count Pointer Count OST Sports Radio. B Block, as always, stands for Blakeney, MikeBlakeney, BLAKENEY.com. Why, boys?
He's a riddle to you because he belongs to us.
See, if you'd done it together, it would have been perfect.
I nailed this in a flub that we had in the pregame show, by the way.
Yeah, no kidding. And, of course, I guess B stands for Blakeney and B stands for barbaric.
Barbaric!
And it stands for barbaric, doesn't it?
Barbaric!
Everything that's been going on.
No kidding.
Robert Byrd. Yeah, that's probably
Robert Byrd. Barbaric.
Barbaric.
Yeah, he might have overused that a little bit.
Barbaric.
You got to say with the West Virginia accent. Come
barbaric.
On.
Barbaric.
There you go.
Barbaric.
Yeah, the old West Virginia accent, being that I think Robert Byrd's roughly the age of 40.
He's approaching three figures.
I always like having a Klansman telling me about something being barbaric.
Barbaric.
That's true.
I like, it's like pot, kettle, shake.
Yeah,
exactly.
Basically.
Now, you wanted to get into the sideshow later on, but we'll talk about Michael Vick's career dissipation life.
Here's my question to you guys, and I kind of know the answer to this because it's something we've talked about quite a bit just in the first few days of covering the Falcons at camp.
Right.
And that is, does this guy really have a future?
No.
Has he played his last down for the Atlanta Falcons?
Yes.
Well, yes, that. As far as the future in the NFL, there's a general manager out there that'll take a chance on him.
Especially after jail time.
Yeah.
Time in the popo.
And can the Falcons afford to get rid of him? I mean, there's been several differing opinions on that.
Yeah, there's two trains of thought.
Yeah, I mean, one opinion is that it's going to cost them an arm and a leg to get rid of him. But there's also a couple of people that have said that while it may cost them a little bit of money in the grand scheme of things, it's not going to cost them so much as long as they do it by the end of August.
Right. It's, what, a $5 million cap hit plus 16 next year or something like that?
It's a prorated cap hit this year, and 16 sounds about right. I don't remember the numbers right off the top of my head, but it will be lessened by the fact that the NFL salary cap is going to go up $5 million, and B, the Falcons, who are already in rebuilding mode, are probably going to be eliminating some of their older, higher-priced players.
Right.
And while it may cost them a little bit of money in the front end, it's not going to cost them a lot.
Yeah, I think the example that Pat Kirwan of NFL.com used in his analysis was the Houston Texans, because they're still paying $20 million to folks, and they're getting better and rebuilding. I imagine they're still paying the likes of Tony Boselli and others like that.
Right.
So is Michael Vick going to turn into the shining example of Adrian McPherson, except on an NFL level?
Pretty darn close, yeah. Again, as we've said, his Falcon career is done.
And I would argue if he serves jail time, his NFL career is probably done, too. I know that the Jolly Roger is more beyond PO'd at the guy.
Wouldn't you be?
Yeah, he out and out lied to him and got called out for it. And that's one of the reasons why he can't plea at this time, because if he pleas, it's an admission of guilt. And the other part of it is, and we talked about this a little bit last week, is this banishment from camp until they can complete their investigation.
Go wear your pointy cap and sit in the corner?
Yeah, essentially it's just a setup in order to enable them to suspend him for the year.
So if you're a Rich McKay Wilkie, what do you do?
If I'm Rich McKay, I go with Joey Harrington, and I call in the Michael Vick era in Atlanta. I would get rid of him, and I guess was it the end of August is the best way to get rid of him, take the least amount of cap hit. He's a PR nightmare. He's nuclear right now. You got a serviceable quarterback as your backup to step in.
Right.
There.
The Falcons have already gone on record as saying Joey Harrington's our guy. He's our starting quarterback.
Which just gave Joey Harrington a boost of confidence. He finally has somewhat of an offensive line to help him out.
And Bobby Petrino has a built-in excuse if his team craps out this year.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
I mean, the Falcons are in a bit of a rebuilding stage, and this gives them the bridge to get to where they want to be. They may surprise us and be a pretty decent team with Petrino's offense and Joey running it. I don't know.
I doubt it.
But we won't know until they start playing.
No, I still doubt.
Kind of the beauty of the NFL is you don't really know until they start playing, because weird things tend to happen.
Right. But you won't be able to say a lot of it in the media coverage this year, only in 45-second clips in a day at a time.
But
true that.
But if he is playing, if he is acquitted and he is playing, just think of what the fans on the road, the fans at the Georgia Dome.
And that's why the commissioner did what he did.
Yeah.
Because they cannot, having experienced the circus on Thursday at camp, they cannot afford to deal with that on a daily basis.
No.
Period.
No.
And I don't think they're going to have to. What the commissioner's decision did essentially is bought them time to make sure that they do their background and check to make sure that he either really didn't do this. Part of that's going to be he's going to ask Vic to come and tell him what he knows and ask him point blank, did he do it or not? Which is something that if he says, yes, I did it, that could be turned around and used as admissible evidence in court.
Here's a kind of a little side item to the whole seven fiasco that you guys probably don't think about right now, but I'm finding it firsthand. Is that what are the fathers telling their sons right now that look up to Michael Vick?
So what are you telling your son?
Well, my son has a Michael Vick jersey. He also has an autographed picture in his room. And what I've told him is, you know, he likes Donovan McNabb. He likes Tony Gonzalez. And I just broached the subject and said, hey, why don't we put a picture of Donovan McNabb up there because you like him. And he's been a little resistant about that because he likes Michael Vick. And the past couple of years, that's all he's known. And so he's being a little more open toward that. I brought up other players. But he still wears the jersey. And I'm kind of leery about him wearing the jersey. And we're explaining to him that he was cruel to dogs, that he wasn't a good person. And as delicately as I could, I kind of let him know what he did to the dogs. And we have a dog at home, and I said, well, how would you feel if somebody did that to your dog? And
just for the sake of accuracy, he's been accused of doing.
Right, I'm sorry.
We have to say
I'm
that.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
He's been accused of doing this to dogs.
And the other issues go ahead real quick.
So, I mean, that's kind of a side issue that, no one has brought up, but it's something I'm dealing with, and I'm sure there's other fathers and mothers out there that are dealing with it as well. as to the situation with Mike Vick.
Christopher King, CBS 46, CBS46.com, actually goes to a memorabilia shop and gauges interest these days in Seven.
CBS 46's Christopher King is live in Duluth with the latest on fan fallout. Chris, explain what's going on.
Oh, Carrie, you see this? It's an authentic Atlanta Falcon Michael Vick jersey. It's even autographed. A few weeks ago, items like these were flying off store shelves. Now, they're just collecting dust. Michael Vick trading cards, Michael Vick action figures, Michael Vick jerseys. A few weeks ago, they were hotter than a Falcons training camp in the middle of August. Now they're colder than Green Bay's Lambeau Field in December.
We've got the jerseys, which were flying off the shelf. We couldn't keep them here, and now they're sitting.
Ever since the Falcons superstar came under suspicion for dogfighting, owners of sporting goods shops and sports memorabilia stores tell us sales of anything having to do with Vick have plummeted. Yesterday, Vick pleaded not guilty to federal dogfighting charges. In the meantime, Nike announced it's suspending its endorsement contract with him. Reebok says it's stopping sales of Vick's replica jerseys. And trading card company Donruss announced it's stopping production of Michael Vick collector's cards.
It's really going to hit us hard because that's going to take a big major player in the collectible market out of the market.
Before the controversy broke, these Michael Vick specialty cards went for as much as $250. Now the dealer says he's lucky if he can give them away.
I could probably stand up and shout Vick Auto for $25. They would probably look at me like, you know, what's wrong with it?
But some Michael Vick fans say since he's not been convicted, they haven't given up on their franchise player just yet.
But I'm sorry to hear about it, you know, about the pit bulls. But, you know, innocent until guilty.
Now, a store owner tells us there are some speculators looking to buy Michael Vick memorabilia with the hope that they get a deal, and if the controversy blows over, the value goes back up.
Okay, guys, 1 minute warning. Wrap up your points.
Well, he's lost the... It has been reported in multiple places at this point. He's lost, A, Nike's cut ties with him. B, Reebok no longer will make his jersey.
Donruss and Upper Deck have pulled him off the shelves.
He's
done.
He's persona non grata as far as the NFL and all of its associated sponsors and businesses are concerned.
And I hope he saved his money.
Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because that source of income is gone forever.
And the last point I wanted to bring up is almost going into the stink a little early, thanks to the folks at AboveTheLaw.com. Michael Vick is now a defendant in a federal civil suit from Jonathan Lee Rich's, name copyrighted, who just happens to call his living address Federal Corrections Institute, Williamsburg, Salters, South Carolina, 29590.
He'll be a defendant in that lawsuit for roughly the length of time it takes you to read this.
And it is a piece of work. It is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. Apparently, Jonathan Lee Rich's copyright plaintiff would like $63 billion backed by gold and silver delivered via UPS to the front gates of FCI Williamsburg, collected from defendant Michael Vick.
Well, we just asked for all in $20 bills unmarked.
Injury to wildlife, conspiracy, illegal dogfighting, extortion, racketeering, gambling, copyright infringement, identity theft, fraud, threats to commit violent acts, brutality, and tax fraud. Violations of the 1st, 2nd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 8th, and 14th Amendments to the Constitution.
He left so many out.
Let's see. Michael Vick stole two white mixed pit bulls from his residence, damaged the RFID chips from the dog collar so he can't track them. They were used in dogfights in late April. And Mr. Vick sold the items on eBay and used the proceeds to purchase missiles from the Iran government.
Because he's starting his own world war.
Yes. Count number two, he stole his identity from Jonathan Lee Rich's copyright plaintiff's coat. The identity was used to open new store account cards to PetSmart and Doggy Warehouse to purchase food for the illegal dogfighting operation. Count three.
Who better to steal an identity from?
Yes. Michael Vick update, he violated my copyright laws by using my copyright name on his personal football outfit and casual clothing without paying me for use. This conspiracy started in 2001 until the day this suit was written. He uses the name to sell t-shirts, Jonathan Lee Rich's mugs, and Mr. Rich's hats. Count four is my favorite.
I know I have a whole lot of Mr. Rich's memorabilia.
Yeah, Rich's seven. Yeah.
He's a collector's dream.
Yeah, Rich's seven, I guess is how it goes now. Count four. On February 10th, 2007, Michael Vick pled allegiance to Al-Qaeda, subjected Jonathan Lee Rich's copyright to microwave testing.
You mean he didn't pledge allegiance to the flag?
No. Michael Vick used drugs in school zones and is in the business of illegal steroids.
But he didn't speed in school zones.
No. Well, unless he used speed in a school zone, then that would be how it would go. Plaintiff prays the court issues a TRO against Michael Vick so he can no longer sell my copyrighted materials. Michael Vick can't steal any more of my animals for dogfighting. Michael Vick has to stop physically hurting my feelings and dashing my hopes. Due to restrictions on typewriters, this suit was handwritten.
Yeah, and it's already been thrown out of court.
Has it?
No, but
it will be.
It will be.
It is. Maybe this guy knows where Jimmy Hoffa is. Com's got it, and we'll have it up on our website.
It doesn't matter whether he knows or not. He'll probably claim it.
He'll claim it, sure.
You want to plug the C Block real quick as we're getting out of the B?
C Block conversation with Paul Crane. We talk SEC football. What went on in Birmingham last week?
And we'll have that. C Block 10cc comes back when Cal Pointer Count OST Sports Radio rolls on after this. And file your lawsuits now while you still have your chance.
Thugs in perpetuity. When we're excited, let's.